City of San Luis Obispo.
We are up to 19. Thanks. And just again, a reminder, as I mentioned at the outset of the meeting, that for item 19, we do have a supplemental sheet with yellow, and I noticed maybe a couple of folks came in after I mentioned that. If you need a copy of that, we do have extra copies in the back of the room. You can check with Harvey Packard back there. And making our presentation for this update of the City of San Luis Obispo Reclamation Facility Permit for their discharge to San Luis Obispo Creek is Matt Thompson of our staff.
Thank you, Roger. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I'm Matt Thompson, presenting item 19 in your agenda package, a modification of the City of San Luis Obispo Water Reclamation Facilities NPDES permit. The Water Reclamation Facility is located in the southern part of the city. They are currently permitted to discharge up to 5.2 million gallons per day of tertiary treated water to San Luis Obispo Creek, which flows approximately 6 miles before reaching the ocean at Avila Beach. The existing NPDES permit requires completion of several special studies, including a reasonable potential analysis, a trihalomethane degradation study, and a disinfection alternative study. Permit also requires it to be reopened by June 1st, 2005 to include any necessary California Toxics Rule effluent limitations and a schedule to comply with those effluent limitations. The city completed those special studies and found that effluent limitations for selenium, cyanide, bromoform, chlorodibromomethane, and dichlorobromomethane are required. They also found that trihalomethanes are not degraded within a reasonably short distance downstream of the discharge point, and that several modifications of the treatment process are available to decrease the concentration of trihalomethanes in the discharge. The proposed permit therefore includes the following modifications: new effluent limitations for selenium, cyanide, and bromoform that are effective immediately. Findings to specify final effluent limitations for chlorodibromo and dichlorobromomethane to be included in the subsequent permit reissuance process in 2007. Also includes a 5-year compliance schedule for chlorodibromo and dichlorobromo. The purpose of the compliance schedule is to allow the city time to make the necessary capital improvements to comply with the final effluent limitations for these constituents. Proposed modifications also include interim effluent limitations for chlorodibromo and dichlorobromomethane that are effective immediately. We've also included a special provision requiring the city to complete a trihalomethanes reduction evaluation by November. The purpose of this evaluation is to determine if simple changes to the use of chlorine in the treatment process could significantly reduce the concentration of trihalomethanes in the discharge. They actually submitted a scope of work for this study already. I just received it this morning. Proposed modifications also include an alternative effluent chlorine limitation to accommodate grab sampling and US EPA approved analysis methodology. The limitation reads that if grab sampling is used instead of continuous analysis, total chlorine residual shall be less than the method detection limit as determined by the procedure set forth in Title 40 Code of Federal Regulations Part 136, Appendix B, which is currently at less than 0.1 milligrams per liter. We sent the draft modifications to the city and other interested parties. We received written comments from the city, from the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo, from the Sierra Club, and from the environment of the public interest. Most of the comments revolved around the length of the proposed compliance schedule. The city is concerned that 5 years is not enough time to complete the necessary improvements to the treatment process. EcoSlow, Sierra Club, and environment and the public interest all argue that 5 years is excessive. based on our observations of the time required for the planning, design, permitting, financing, and construction of such extensive capital improvements, we believe that the 5-year compliance schedule is reasonable. The city submitted another comment letter just last week regarding the alternative chlorine limitation. Their letter and my detailed responses are provided in a supplemental sheet that you should have received earlier this week, but I'll go through it with you. The city remains concerned about our proposed alternative chlorine limitation, which I described previously. The city states that expecting 100% compliance is unreasonable and that this language will result in approximately $18,000 of mandatory penalties annually. The city requests a limited number of excursions. More specifically, they have requested this language. Staff objects to this proposed language for several reasons. First, the proposed language stems from the existing 99% compliance language for continuous monitoring. This 99% compliance language is not appropriately applied to grab sampling. Grab samples by nature represent 100% of the time period in which they are taken. The 99% compliance language is only appropriate for continuous analysis where actual data is provided for the entire time period. Secondly, the proposed language is significantly less stringent than staff's proposed language and the 99% compliance language. The discharger has proposed that up to 3 excursions above 0.1 milligrams per liter be allowed per calendar month. This is equivalent to less than 90% compliance. This may constitute backsliding, which is clearly prohibited by the Clean Water Act. Lastly, allowing a limited number of excursions for grab sampling would be inconsistent with other similar permits in the Central Coast region. All other dischargers to inland surface waters performing grab sampling of chlorine in the Central Coast region are expected to achieve 100% compliance. Staff believes this proposed alternative grab sampling language is reasonable and appropriate and recommends no changes to the language as a result of this comment. I recommend adoption of the proposed modifications to order number 2002-0043. I'd be glad to answer your questions at this time. Thank you.
Questions?
Dr. Press.
Pages 4 and 5 of the staff report, you have an interim effluent limitation for cyanide of 7 micrograms per liter and a daily maximum, and then the final limitation of 8.6, and I see how you calculated the 8.6 because it discussed that on the second column, the right-hand column of page 5. But I just have to say that just conceptually, the idea of a final effluent limitation being less stringent than an interim just doesn't make any sense to me. And it sounds like, you know, either the final should be brought down, or the two should be reconciled somehow. I don't like to see that those two figures side by side.
Well, and maybe for the reason is that it looks like what's the justification for the interim being tighter than the final?
Well, that's what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, the as I said previously, the interim effluent limitations were based on the highest observed concentration
right.
in effluent, which
right.
might have been less. Okay. They had one. I need to back up. That's actually a mistake. you're looking at page 5, but if you read later. In staff's responses to comments, the city states that they are likely able to achieve compliance with the final effluent limitation, and so there are no interim effluent limitations.
Uh-huh.
There is now a final effluent limitation for cyanide that is effective immediately, which is based on the California Toxics Rule criteria.
Okay, but Your prior work and their sampling suggests that maybe that final limitation is still higher than is really necessary. I mean, it's derived from an algorithm that I think is less persuasive than their own sampling. If their own sampling is finding that they could make, meet a 5 microgram per liter, no 7, but earlier they have a, they only had 1 of 7 examples exceed the lowest cyanide criterion on page 3. So I don't know. I just wonder if we, what the justification is for the 8.6, if there isn't justification to come down.
And clearly the point is that 7, the interim limit, previously proposed interim limit, is more protective of the environment than the final limit that we're ending up
with.
Sure.
So why can't we do the interim limit forever?
Sure, I think that would be a better question for the city, but if they can accept the 4.1 instead of 4.3 and the 8.3 instead of the 8.6, I don't see any reason why we can't.
Well, how about the 7.0?
Well, this is maybe a question for Lori. Since the 8.6 is a promulgated standard in the California Toxic Rule or came from the federal, isn't that the number that is most appropriate in terms of?
Well, are they saying that they'll have any problem meeting the 7.0 into the future? If they can meet it now, I don't understand why there would be a problem with them meeting it in the future.
The one hiccup they had where they had a cyanide hit, they believe it was an anomaly. I believe that they can meet the final effluent limitations of 4.3 and 8.6, they can likely meet the interim limitations of 4.1 and 8.2. And I believe, though, that Dave Hicks of the City of San Luis Obispo is here, and he might want to speak to that. I understand he does have some comments prepared.
Should we hear from him now?
Yeah.
Or?
We're done with the staff presentation.
Mr. Hicks, could you
come
to the podium?
Would you like me just to address this at one issue right now? I don't know if the board's still in discussion or... to be honest, I don't really know. We'd have to go back and look. You know, the basis of our comment that we can be in compliance with those three constituents from the RPA was we felt that one of the 9 samples that we took during our RPA sampling had those three constituents higher than the CTR requirement for that beneficial use for the receiving water. So, looking at past sampling that we had done prior to the RPA, we felt that we could be compliant with those three requirements. Changing them right now, I don't know. I'd have to go back, and I'm here with my water reclamation facility supervisor. We're not sure. We just have to go back and look at our records to see. But we can't comply with the ones that are in the permit right now. But to be honest, I don't have the data with me to tell you 100% if we could do that.
You can't comply with the interim or the final limits right now?
The limits that are in the permit, which are final limitations. Is that right?
As I said previously, the interim effluent limitations were based on the highest observed concentration in effluent. I think that suggests that they can likely comply with the lower interim effluent limitations.
But, Matt, you also referred to a hiccup. So are you including the hiccup, or is that throwing out an outlier?
Was that last sampling event?
Yeah, our last sampling event had several constituents that were higher, the bromoform and the cyanide, and maybe one other constituent.
The city had completed one sampling event after they had completed the reasonable potential analysis, and that I don't believe is reflected in the staff report. There may have been that particular sampling event, the cyanide concentration may have been higher than the interim effluent limitation here. But like I said, the city believes that to be an anomaly.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that we let Mr. Hicks go ahead and and give his remarks that he was going to make. And if necessary, we could break from this item and allow staff from regional board and city to take a look at the data. Doesn't sound like there are a huge number of data points to look at, and then come back with a recommendation.
That's fine.
Great.
Go ahead, Mr. Hicks.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the regional board. My name is David Hicks, and I'm the wastewater division manager for the city of San Luis Obispo. I'd first like to thank the board for approving the city's request for being placed on the state revolving fund. One of the, I think it was item number 28 this morning that you approved. The city is looking at doing a variety of improvements to the water reclamation facility in the near future for capacity, for treatment improvements, and also for facility infrastructures. And this will enable us to take that journey for borrowing the money from the state. I'd also like to thank our staff members, especially Matt and Gerhard, have been very cooperative and open to our staff requests and suggestions during this permit reopener. As many of you know, permit reopeners and renegotiating studies and things like that can sometimes be a long, drawn-out process, and Matt and Gerhard have been especially open to our requests and suggestions. As Matt's presentation told you, the city has gone to great extents to provide the studies that were placed in our permit for THMs, looking at groundwater for nutrients and THMs, looking at the FATE study, and doing our RPA. To date, as all of you know, these aren't cheap studies, and the city has expended significant funding for these. We continue to work toward compliance with the water quality objectives that have been in place and in our permit. As many of you know, a lot of the drivers for our water quality, for the objectives that have been placed in our permit, are based on the MUM designation for San Luis Obispo Creek, of which makes these limits some of the most stringent in the state. Actually, it makes them the most stringent in the state. And probably remember, too, that the city has got some issues that we don't necessarily believe that end-of-pipe water quality objectives are the best fit for the city of San Luis Obispo or for San Luis Obispo Creek. Working toward that, we're continuing our studies with THMs and looking at their fate and things that we can do at the water reclamation facility. We've just received a scope of work, and we are looking at ways that we can reduce THMs within the plant. I'll talk a little more in a minute here about some of the issues and some of the things that are facing the city as far as THMs and how we operate the plant and water quality. But we are looking at doing a disinfection pilot study that would use another method of disinfection. Matt didn't mention, but we've created a model that works within the water body to determine the fate of THMs as they work their way down San Luis Obispo Creek. We did meet the CTR requirements for those constituents at about 29,000 feet downstream of the water reclamation facility, but that was a fair amount down from the outfall, and I don't believe staff is particularly comfortable with that number. We are looking at trying to move that closer or maybe eliminating it, and I think that's something that we will have some pretty good data and some interesting information coming. Going back to some of the things the city is also doing, we're also looking at all of our regulatory options, too. As you know, the SIP allows us to study or look at site-specific objectives or use attainability analysis. Those are things that we will be looking at because depending on how things work out as far as THMs and a variety of other things that are coming along, it's going to be very expensive for us to meet some of these requirements, and we're kind of even wondering if we can, depending on the nature of those requirements. There was a comment about 5 years being a reasonable time. 5 years is pretty tight when we're looking at completely changing a process at the water reclamation facility. Disinfection tends to be one of those things that is kind of a tricky beast. We disinfect because we're trying to meet another discharge limitation, that being coliform. So the options and the things we're looking for are things that meet our existing coliform limitation and at the same time meet all the other process criteria within the water reclamation facility. So I think just to kind of wrap up this discussion before I talk a little about our chlorine limitation is we are committed to, you know, protecting the beneficial uses of the city, of San Luis Obispo Creek. we are somewhat concerned that some of those beneficial uses may not be appropriate and are driving some of these more stringent requirements. But we have always made sure that we have adequate resources to operate our facilities and to address any permit conditions or studies that that have been placed in our permit. Given that, I wanted to talk a little about, and I do have a brief PowerPoint presentation. If you can.
But before you do, could I just ask you a
question?
You said that you feel some of the beneficial use designations may not be appropriate.
Well, specifically, San Luis Obispo Creek, the majority of the flow in some of the driest parts of the year is all the effluent from the city's water reclamation facility. That water actually comes from several reservoirs that are outside of the watershed. And so if not for the discharge from the water reclamation facility, there wouldn't be a significant, if any, flow below the outfall. The nexus there is that appropriate for a drinking water source? And the Department of Health Services and a variety of other agencies are very reluctant to, say that, one, drinking effluent from a wastewater plant isn't really an appropriate source of water, and two, it's unreliable. Our flows, peak and ebb daily. And so whether or not the MUM designation is the most appropriate, beneficial, and protected use for the receiving water is something that we consider, something that's driving these limits and may not be the most appropriate for the water body. There are others that are, obviously.
So you think that when there is flow during the winter, that would be an appropriate designation? And then
perhaps. I don't know. It depends. I mean, we have one of the driest winters. In fact, when we did our RPA sampling, it was one of the driest periods of time in the past 10 years. And so I think the data that our RPA gave the board and board staff is probably the most conservative available, because there was no dilution in the creek. Everything ended up being end-of-the-pipe water quality objective. And as you know, this state implementation plan does allow for some dilution, but for a lot of water bodies like San Luis Obispo Creek and throughout Central and Southern California, there is no dilution available. So water quality objectives, which are, also used to make discharge limitations, end up being end of pipe for facilities like ours. And so that makes them the most stringent limits available. And right now there is no guidance for effluent-dependent water bodies like San Luis Obispo. And it is a statewide issue. I'm sure the board's aware of that, too.
Okay. Go ahead.
I want to talk a little about our chlorine residual discharge limitation. Go ahead, please. We have a little history with chlorine residual. We had a no-detectable chlorine residual limit back prior to 2002, our permit adoption. And it was actually it didn't give a limit. It just said no detectable chlorine. It's virtually impossible to have 100% compliance with a zero detection limit or less than detection limit for chlorine residual. And I think if you go back and we look at some of the mandatory penalties that have been assessed on some facilities, there are usually one or two chlorine residual violations in many of those. In 2001, we paid over $48,000 in MIGDEN penalties. A lot of those were for coliform and chlorine residual. The new permit that we were granted in 2002 gave us the performance-based limit language that Matt pointed out. The current limit is what is referred to as a performance-based or a compliance-based limit, and it equates to 7 hours and 26 minutes a month of excursions over the limit. And that's based on 7 hours and 26 minutes being 99% of a 30-day month. Sure.
Being 1%, right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, being 1%, 99%, right. This is the limit as it is in the permit right now. As you can see, it allows for 7 hours and 26 minutes of excursions and no individual excursion to last over 30 minutes. Thank you. The current limit has allowed us brief and minor excursions. We haven't had any penalties or violations other than those related to plant upsets. It uses a technically justified lab method, and it it protects the receiving water. I mean, there's been no observable negative effects to the receiving water. Our proposed limit does utilize that technical limit, and I do appreciate staff granting us a limit that we can use technically. But it doesn't allow for the brief minor excursions that our past one had. We will have some mandatory penalties. I was just talking to our water reclamation facility supervisor. It's just kind of the inevitability of treatment. I will address those in a minute. And will probably result in the use of additional chemicals because, you know, we are going to be trying to meet this limit, but at the same time adding more chemicals to our effluent. And again, our compliance is at 100% is very difficult. Please. The continuous chlorine monitoring language that is in our permit does allow for the 7 hours and 26 minutes of excursions. It doesn't use an EPA method that's technically defensible or legally defensible. The 0.01 milligram per limit, we can't meet benchtop. There's no approved method for it. And there's no guarantee because we're using all these technically unjustifiable methods that water quality is really being protected. We talked a little about how hard it is to do 100% compliance at a facility like ours. We use a biological treatment. We have an activated sludge process that in itself is kind of a living, breathing thing that has some chemical changes, that has some changes. We also have a tertiary treatment where we filter and have to use chlorine there. We've realized that we have some problems with bacteria and organisms becoming chlorine resistant, and to make sure that we meet our coliform limitations, sometimes we have to add more chlorine. We also use chlorine for other things in the plant. We use it to meet our turbidity limit, our color limit, and our chlorine and our coliform limit. So not only do we use chlorine for final disinfection, but we also use it to make sure that all the other limitations and all the other processes are efficient within the water reclamation facility. Just to give you a brief history, in 2003 we had 6 excursions, none lasting over 30 minutes and didn't result in violations. And in 2004 we had 2 related to a plant upset that would have resulted in a violation. Again, there was no visible negative effects to water quality. And so where the city's coming from, I think, on this is, I'm waiting for Matt to finish here, is our proposed limit is, it does protect the receiving water. It is more stringent than the current limit because there's a significant less periods of time for noncompliance. It is technically justified. And we are looking at, we are trying to achieve some middle ground. We have proposed to reduce the amount of times that we can be out of compliance during those 30-minute periods. The 2 milligram per limit is still in there. The city is willing to, and I just read Matt's comments here, we can sample twice daily if that would make board staff feel more comfortable in offering more sampling points. And we can, talking to our WRF supervisor, instead of no more than 3 individual excursions, we could go down to 2 individual excursions because we think we can comply with that. And I think by sampling twice would give us a significantly more data points, and it would allow fewer individual excursions. And so the other thing I want to say is nothing really has changed at what we're doing other than the limit. And it would be unfortunate if we had to come back here and pay penalties or pay fines or explain what we're doing when nothing's really changed. And I just want the board to realize that we are trying to make sure that we have no excursions at all. We have a 100% compliance policy on how we operate the plant, and that these excursions, because of the nature of how we treat wastewater, is why we're asking for a different limitation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Daniels.
Yeah, I have a few questions. How many chlorine samples do you make a month now?
Right now, at a minimum, we take about 30. We may take more. Jim, do you have any?
No, just one.
Yeah, one daily.
Okay. So if we're looking at this 99% compliance thing, that would mean that if you even had one sample out, that's above the 1%, that's 3% right there. 3% of your samples have a hit. So you've already violated the 1% that you're allowed.
Well, first of all, if you notice, the new language isn't really 99% or compliance based. And if you look, because it was modified prior to the first letter that we sent, it's just literally a set amount of excursions that would be limit that would be allowed. So I'd, you know.
Yeah, but you're, the three or the two that you're now talking about is even yet more. Also, you're talking about a proposal to sample twice a day when you have, I guess, when you have a hit or something. But twice a day is 12 hours. So I mean, you could have an excursion. There was language up there about 30 minutes, and if you're only sampling twice a day, there's no information about how long that lasted. You know, it could be 5 hours it lasted, could be 10 hours that lasted, and the second one could be clean, and there's no guarantee that the 30 minutes that you're promising was even met.
Well, I think to go back, we're trying to find a middle ground where, you know, if you're going to allow continuous monitoring with no technical justification and no way to legally defend that, why would somebody with a zero limit have to pay, you know, or would be in violation when they're using technical justified methods when, you know, we are on a routine for sampling and would detect those things? I mean, if you look where we grab sample and what we do, we're not expecting violations. If obviously with our standard provisions that are in our permit, if we do have or if we do feel we are violating, we are obligated to sample. And so to kind of get away from that compliance-based language, what we're asking for is some relief from, you know, being asked to do things 100%. Because certain things, like I said, in biological, with biological treatment, and this goes back to our old coliform limit, too, it was very difficult for us to meet less than 2.2 or a zero limit. We can meet it on almost everything else. But when it comes to having to address those type of things, it's almost impossible.
Well, that leads me to the next set of questions. You mentioned needing to do a pilot study, pilot plant approach here. What technique are you going to study in that pilot?
We're going to look at chlorine dioxide, which is a strong oxidizer that is actually going to be manufactured at the plant using sodium hypochlorite. And it has the promise of reducing THMs and behaving in a lot of ways like we use chlorine. And, you know, I talked about how we use chlorine in other parts of the plant, specifically our filters and our cooling and our equalization tanks is an area where we have bacterial and algal growth that we need to destroy. And as you know, using chlorine on organics like that creates THMs. And so our hope is we can use chlorine dioxide, and we'll see a significant reduction in THM generation.
Why not consider just getting off of chlorine completely? I mean, if you look at most of the toxic, nasty, carcinogenic, vile kind of chemicals out there, almost all of them, or certainly many of them, are chlorine-based, from DDT to dioxin. I mean, chlorine is there. And, you know, you may be able to squeak by changing the chlorine mechanism you use now, but you're going to end up eventually paying for it because there'll be some other constituent that, you know, NDMA or something like that, and you'll have to, you know, scurry around and try and get out of that one. So why not just cut your losses and go to, you know, ultraviolet and get out of this rat race right now?
Well, you know, I'd love to find, you know, the magic bullet for, you know, meeting all of our other limits, plus, you know, maybe not using a chemical like chlorine. Chlorine's got a lot of other benefits. It's reasonable in cost. You know, we use 600-700 pounds a day or even more. It is something that we know is a known effective disinfectant. It saves a lot of lives. I mean, we still use it, you know, every day in our water and wastewater. Going to other, you know, just going to ultraviolet doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be able to meet our coliform limit. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to meet our color turbidity limits. And so when we are looking at other methods of disinfection, but right now chlorine is still the most effective and most reasonable. And so, like, again, this kind of goes back to we do have a small amount of THMs that we discharge to the water body, and we're trying to meet that MUN criteria. Mm-hmm. And we know nobody is actually using this water as a municipal or domestic source. So, you know, if I can find something better that works better, we will pursue it. And that is what we are. You know.
Relative to the THMs, the staff report mentions an approach of buying property along the creek for, I don't know, maybe the whole 4 miles or whatever, but mm-hmm. to allow you to continue to, you know, to give you a bigger pollution range that you're free to do in. And are you seriously considering that?
Well, actually, if you look, what is driving that limitation? What's driving that limitation is the MUN or the human health criteria. You know, the human health criteria that the MUN designation is based on is a 70-kilogram person drinking 2 liters of water and eating 6.5 grams of fish every day for 70 years of their life and having a 1 in a million chance. Mm-hmm. That's really highly unlikely in our water body. And because it's effluent dependent and a lot of the water is already appropriated to people who have other water rights who are using it for irrigation and the rest of it for habitat, is this really the most appropriate limitation for the water body? And that's the question that, you know, we want to pursue when we look at site-specific objectives. And the idea would be if we can get rid of a significant amount of THMs, that point of compliance, you know, that point where we would meet the CTR requirement would move up closer to the outfall. And the idea of maybe acquiring conservation easements would be we can guarantee that nobody is going to be using it as a drinking water source and that the MUN MUN beneficial use would be protected downstream of there for people who may want to use it, even though it's highly unlikely.
Okay. Thank you.
What about the market for recycled water?
Currently, the city, you may know if you drive by, the facility has been in construction for a while. We're looking at a project of about approximately 1,000 acre feet. And John Moss is here, I think, and he can talk a little more about that. But we are looking at recycling about 1,000 acre feet a year. But that's got some other wrinkles because we're also dedicating part of that creek flow for habitat with the fish and game and NOAA fisheries, too. So that's the other thing here is we're kind of in a rock and a hard place. We've been asked to provide stream flow for habitat, but as you also know, we're trying to provide water for customers in the most reasonable and economical manner. So we're kind of obligated to put water in the creek.
1,000 acre feet, what does that translate into MGD? It is?
About 1,000 acre feet annually. It depends on demand because it's, you know, a daily average flow and depends on our customer demand and what we have to put in the creek to meet the habitat requirements.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Any other questions from the board? All right.
I have a question to staff.
Go ahead.
I was actually struck back here in the chlorine limitations between the different levels required from the continuous versus the grab. You know, the continuous has the 0.01 and the grab has the 0.1. And I was wondering where those come from and why they're so disparate.
That stems from the 2002 permit renewal. There were two limitations. The original was 0.1.
Right.
And there was language in there that effective December 1st, 2004, the limit would decrease to 0.01. There is really no technical justification for bringing the limit down to 0.01. There are no reliable analytical methods that can go that low.
So effectively then it's, if the method really goes down to 0.1, then effectively that limit is 0.1.
Is that correct? That is
so essentially it's 0.1 continuous or 0.1 grab.
That's correct.
Okay.
In fact, it's actually not 0.1 continuous because the continuous analyzer is not as reliable as the method that is used with grab sampling. Grab sampling, you pull it into the lab and you have a more accurate measurement.
Okay.
So it may actually be higher with continuous than 0.1.
Okay. I also had a question on page 2 of the MRP. It's the sampling frequency for some of the constituents. Particularly the constituents that we're talking about here, some of them, you know, the selenium, cyanide, bromoformone, and the and the two THMs. And we're talking about quarterly sampling. I'm wondering if these are such concerns that maybe we shouldn't have more frequent monitoring, like monthly or something for those. Quarterly seems a little lackadaisical to me if these are really, you know, something that there is a reasonable potential that they will happen, as I think we've determined. So where did the frequencies come from? And
the quarterly does represent an increase from the previous monitoring program. I think the previous was either semi-annually or annually. I felt that quarterly was fair. Monthly would be very frequent relative to several other monitoring programs in the region. But I'm open to that if that's what the board wants.
Okay. All right. Let's see, what else did I have? Yeah, there were some letters, as you mentioned here, about the time to actually affect this change. And I had some concerns about that myself. Let me go right to the, I think, the matter that is most worrisome, which is that it mentions that on page 14 of the staff report that it sounds like this fix for some of these constituents has gotten kind of combined with plans to upgrade the plant. And that's the reason it's taking so long. So it's not just simply fixing the chlorine problem. It's also a big upgrade to the plant issue, and they want to do it all together, which makes sense. And that's the reason it's so long. Because to me, it also didn't quite make sense that it would take 5 years to fix this one fairly isolated problem. For example, it mentions here on this page that on a four-year time schedule order, allowing 5 years for a remodel update to an existing plant seems inconsistent. And staff mentions down below that they were planning to increase the capacity at the plant at the same time. So is that really the case, that the reason this is taking 5 years is that we're doing a big remodel as well?
I think it would be best for the city to answer that question.
Okay.
Right. Our preliminary studies, looking at disinfection studies that we are doing right now, lists options that range from $4 million to, $1 million in capital, and then a big change in ongoing costs. Until we know exactly, if some of the other limits that'll work or some of the point of compliance options that'll work, and during that meantime when we're looking at those things, finding out what's going to work, pilot testing it, acquiring the financing, design and construction, even though 5 years may sound like a long time, that's actually a fairly short time to make sure that we can be in compliance with some of these pretty stringent requirements. You have to remember that the THM requirements that are in our final effluent limitations are significantly lower than what's allowed in drinking water right now in California. And so a significant portion of the time, our total THM concentrations are lower than what would be allowed in the California drinking water. And so the other thing is, too, we don't want to go off and do anything rash that won't work or make us be in spotty compliance, and still being, now we got something new, now it doesn't work, now we still have to pay for it. On top of that, the state requirements for borrowing that money are going to make sure that we do have something that is compliant. And that, just from our experience on our last upgrades, it takes a fair amount of time. Plus, I believe the SIP does say that we have to be in compliance by 2010, and any time that we can take advantage of those times to make sure that we're doing whatever we need to do is, I think, the best method.
There were a couple of things in the compliance schedule that in particular jumped out at me. The first two of them, in fact. The 7 months it takes to send a request for proposals. And maybe you could address why it would take,
Actually, that's 7 months. The 7 months, you mean for the November 1st deadline?
Yep.
Yeah, that's actually a report, I believe. Isn't that right, Matt?
It says send request for environmental and consulting engineering proposals. So I assume that's an RFP you'd send out. No? Yes?
He's not talking about the trihalo method.
Oh, okay.
Reduction evaluation. He's talking about the first milestone.
The first milestone?
The first milestone in the compliance schedule, which is to release a request for proposals. And I can tell you my justification for allowing that time is to allow them to get feedback from their trihalomethanes reduction evaluation
right,
to formulate that request for proposals.
Okay.
We'll have the information from the study, then we'll know better where we want to proceed, and that does take.
Well, let's go on to the second one, which is initiate design and facility improvements, which I assume is to accept one of these proposals, and that's 6 months. So why does that take 6 months?
I think I'll emphasize again, these are fairly sophisticated and complicated engineering studies and design. And making a significant modification to a water reclamation facility like ours takes some time. If we can do that in 6 months, that would be, I think, a pretty good and conscientious effort.
Well,
I'm not trying to.
Still, again, let me know whether I'm misinterpreting this. It sounds like that item is to accept one of these RFPs, and I don't know. You certainly want to be a little careful about that, check references or whatever. But 6 months to pick one of the RFPs, that seems rather excessive to me. If there's more going on there, I'd like to know it, but 6 months sounds excessive.
I understand.
Well, certainly there's no reason that the city can proceed on a faster schedule or submit some of these documents. The schedule that we came up with is based on our experience with other treatment facilities, CMC, City of Pismo Beach, which we talked about yesterday, and Port Los Osos. So we didn't want to. It's kind of that balancing act, coming up with dates that are fairly reasonable but without putting them out of compliance and having to hammer them at a later time for some document that they would propose.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Briggs, would you like to help us with a path of direction here?
Yeah, my suggestion earlier was that we actually break from this item, have the two staffs of the regional board and the city conflab, in particular on the cyanide issue, take a look at the, sound like there were maybe 9 data points or something like that, to see if you could come to a mutual meeting of the minds in terms of that issue. And it sounds like it might also be wise to also take a look at the schedule and see if you can do likewise with the schedule. So maybe, and it's probably a reasonable time to take a morning break anyway. So if we take, I know you said 5 minutes, Matt, but I'm thinking maybe 15 minutes would be better.
Okay. Would we come back to this item, or would we would, okay, instead of proceeding to 24 and giving them more time?
Does that seem reasonable? Okay, let's try that.
Dr. Balcom?
If need be, if they need more time, we could reevaluate it when we reconvene.
Okay. Dr. Balcom?
I'd like to ask a question about sampling, grab sampling, that sort of thing, maybe.
Go ahead.
Suppose the plant was, in fact, under continuous monitoring or whatever, 90% compliant. Suppose. And that means 10% of the time it's not in compliance, right? And I was to reach in on a grab sample to detect how well the plant was doing. So with a grab sample, a spotty sample, my chance of getting that excursion is only 1 in 10. So it would seem that in order to have a reliable estimate of the plant's performance overall, a grab sample might want to be more stringent than continuous monitoring. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yes.
Probably the last thing, too, is that we do continuously monitor the chlorine and the dechlorination chemicals. We use a oxidation reduction potential formula that looks at, how much are we putting in, how much are we destroying as far as the residual. So it's not like we're just putting chlorine and the other chlorine, the chemical in, and saying, hey, I'm sure we're dechlorinating. We are closely monitoring that, but that doesn't give us a residual that is technically justified. So obviously, if we do see an anomaly with our dechlorination process, we go out and sample. So I just wanted to make the board aware that this isn't like something that we're just, you know, trying to figure out when to sample or anything else. We have a set sampling time that we've based that's the most conservative, and we do monitor chemical addition and its chlorine residual destruction in addition of the chemical that destroys chlorine continuously. So.
Okay. Mr. Moss, did you want to speak to us also? I know you have a speaker card and you've checked off that you...
Yes, you've been very patient with us this morning, and if I can just take a couple of minutes, take a slightly less technical approach to the questions and our desires here with you. And I'll be brief because I know you're anxious for a break. I am John Moss, Utilities Director with the City of San Luis Obispo. I would like to start off by first emphasizing that we have an excellent and productive working relationship with your staff. We've enjoyed working with them on our permit, and I believe we share a common concern and goal for water quality, and I think that's demonstrated in our continuing efforts to provide improved treatment facilities, more effective operations, in-depth scientific analysis of the requirements, the legislation, et cetera. With that, I believe we are literally doing the best we can. That said, I think we've reached a point of impasse on a proposed chlorine residual limit, as you've heard from David Hicks, and I won't reiterate the points that Dave has made. Instead, I'd like to boil it down to just a few simple questions with answers. From a water quality standpoint, what will be achieved by providing the city with the proposed limit for chlorine residual? In my view, nothing. We are currently providing the best operations we can. That's our goal. It's our mandate. It's what we do. We strive to achieve compliance not only with the chlorine residual limit, but with all other limits contained in our permit, many of which, as Dave has said, require chlorine for us to meet. Our operations will not change as a result of a modified permit limit, and will not change also if we achieve the limit that we and the methodologies that we propose as an alternate limit, which we feel is equally protective of the receiving water. What are the effects of the few minor short-duration concentration and low-concentration chlorine residual excursions on the receiving water as would be allowed under our proposed alternate limit? Arguably none. Given the volatility of chlorine, it's highly unlikely that there would be any measurable chlorine residual within just a few feet downstream of our discharge. What will the staff's proposed limit for chlorine residual mean to the city? The limit as proposed places the city in a very undesirable position with limited options. We can either accept the proposed limit and expect to be coming before you annually as you consider your MIGDEN penalties, whining about the infeasible nature of our ability to achieve compliance with those limits and its benign effect on the receiving water, only for you to then advise us that you have no options under MIGDEN and will pay our unfortunate fines. Or we can appeal your decision to the state board as one which is infeasible to meet and not technically justified. At the time you establish the limit, which is now, is when you do have the option to give us a limit that's justifiable, protective of water quality, and feasible for us to meet. Neither of the two options previously mentioned provided to us through staff's recommendation represent what I consider to be a good use of public resources, nor do I feel they will result in improved water quality. What I do ask of your board at this time is that if you understand and can agree with the concerns that we have raised with the proposed limit, I would ask that you return this item to your staff for continued development and cooperation with the city with direction to seek a reasonable and feasible chlorine limit that remains equally protective of water quality, such as that which has been proposed by the city. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Moss? Okay. Why don't we take our break then? And we will reconvene at 5 after 10. Okay, folks, let's continue with our meeting. Mr. Briggs, would you like to bring us back to this agenda item?
Yeah, sorry for the additional delay there. And we've had some discussions on the various issues that came up during the testimony on the City of San Luis Obispo item. And Matt Thompson of our staff will give us the outcome of our deliberations on that, and then we should give the city an opportunity to respond to that as well.
First, I'd like to address the interim cyanide limitation issue. We reviewed the city's reasonable potential analysis and the highest observed concentration of cyanide in effluent was 7 micrograms per liter. The proposed permit includes final effluent limitations of average monthly of 4.26 micrograms per liter and a maximum daily limitation of 8.6. We rounded it to 8.6 micrograms per liter. As far as the idea of reducing the max daily limitation to 7 micrograms per liter based on the highest observed concentration, we're in agreement with the city that that is not a technically defensible or enforceable limitation. So we continue to recommend that the maximum daily limitation be 8.6 micrograms per liter as proposed.
Okay, could you tell me why you don't think it's technically defensible?
It's not based on anything. It's based on sampling data. The 8.6 number is based on the California Toxics Rule criteria.
When we look at backsliding, do we look at data or do we look at the level in the permit?
This isn't actually a backsliding issue because this is a new limit. Backsliding only applies to reducing existing limits and permits.
Okay, so what is the existing limit? Is it?
There is no existing limit for cyanide. We had originally proposed an interim limit, but we were going to include a finding that specified a final limit in the permit reissuance process in 2007. Instead, the city said that they can likely comply with the final effluent limits we had proposed for cyanide. So we made those final effluent limits for cyanide effective immediately. We are not recommending an interim limit for cyanide.
Are we bound by the limitations in the California Toxics Rule?
Lori?
I don't know of a basis for imposing the more stringent limitation in this case. I'm not sure of the answer, and I wasn't able to find anybody during the break that did. But I'm not aware of a basis for imposing a more stringent limitation. And actually, because there are daily and weekly maximums, that 4.3 number is more stringent. It's not just a 7.0 limit.
Okay.
Yeah,
or the 8.6 limit.
We believe that the 4.3, the monthly average, will be the driver for compliance.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. Do you feel that the 8.6 and the 4.3 on the monthly are protective of water quality?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
they're based on the California Toxics Rule, so yes.
Well, no. That wasn't the question.
Well, to put things in perspective.
I don't care what the Toxics Rule says. Do you think
yes.
that it's protective of water quality?
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
These aren't numbers that are just set forth in the SIP, 4.3 and 8.6. They're actually calculated numbers based on the data that the discharger submitted. And they're calculated based on the rules in the SIP to meet effluent requirements that the state has determined are adequately protective. So it's not everybody has to meet these limits. It's calculated based on this data.
So do you think it's protective water quality, 8.6 and 4.3?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thanks.
The 4.3 number is taking straight from the California Toxics Rule with no dilution. With no dilution, okay? The 8.6 number is calculated based on the number of samples they had.
Mr. Shawcross, maybe the question you want to ask is, Matt?
Oh, okay, maybe I can ask it in the negative.
Okay.
What daily maximum or monthly average would not be protective of water quality? where's the cutoff?
It would be any monthly average greater than 4.3 micrograms per liter.
So in other words, staff probably doesn't have any information that would lead them to conclude that the CTR standards are not protective. Is that a correct? I think Mr. Shallcross is asking something that's leading to that.
I don't know whether their numbers are protective or not.
Right.
But I'm just asking scientifically, or according to our staff, are these numbers protective? I don't care what the California toxic. Right. I mean, they may have their own reasons for whatever numbers or calculation or formula they come up with.
Yeah. And I think what staff is saying is that they don't have any information.
Oh, okay. If that's what they're saying, then that's fine.
Yeah. Well, that's that's the form of the answer.
I think that's a fair statement.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions of staff? Okay, Mr. Daniels.
Well, I'd just like to echo what started this whole thing. I think it's exceedingly ironic that staff proposes a interim limit below the final. It's no surprise they think they can meet the final limit, since the final limit is bigger than the interim limit. And so it's kind of strange and ironic, and I'm not quite sure what to make of it all even yet. The other thing that was looked at was the schedule, I believe, in our little break. So I'd like to hear what was determined there.
We continue to be in agreement with the city that the five-year compliance schedule is reasonable. There is some flexibility with the interim milestones, but the reality is that the five-year timeline is really the most important date. The city has expressed willingness to accelerate the interim milestones where they can, and they may be willing to speak to that matter as well.
How much of this schedule is because of the desire to do a expansion and update and that sort of thing, and combine it with this effort?
The one milestone that's driving a lot of this would be the 2010 date. Obviously, it makes more sense and it's much more efficient to do a whole plan upgrade at once. But if required to do that, that would be the thing that we would address. So, regardless of our internal timelines or desires to maybe build in capacity and things that past 2010, we would if required and how things wash out. Be compliant by 2010. I'll again state that we have our own system of making sure we get RFPs and engineering proposals in and design and financing and things like that. As staff said, internally we will work on accelerating that the most. Mm-hmm. But because of the nature of not even knowing what we may be building here in 5 years, we need to have as much time as we can to make sure what we build is compliant, is efficient, and will meet the future needs for the water body. So,
if I may just add one brief comment on that, the upgrade components necessary to meet future plant capacity are well defined already within our master plan. We know what they are. We've known what they're going to be for some time, and so the time for design or development of those is really not the driver in the need for additional time for study. It's the treatment requirements that we're facing for both THMs and nutrients that we want to analyze and make sure we have good science behind whatever we're going to do, and it's going to keep us in compliance.
Okay.
We also have some resolution with regards to the chlorine, the alternative chlorine limitation for grab sampling. After conferring with the city, we have come up with the following language. The city originally proposed that they allow up to 3 individual excursions in any calendar month. The city has agreed to perform grab sampling twice per day. So instead of 30 samples per month, we would have 60, okay? And so allowing one individual excursion is essentially equivalent to more than 97% compliance, if I'm correct. So we've proposed to accommodate the city by allowing one individual excursion in any calendar month, but keeping the remaining language the same. In addition to this, we would revise the monitoring and reporting program to specify that samples for total chlorine residual be taken twice daily and within 30 minutes of each other to demonstrate compliance with the second requirement.
And does the time of day matter when these samples are going to be pulled?
It does matter. The permit specifies that the samples be taken at peak loading, typically in the late morning, and they do that.
So is this technically possible that they would be able to take a sample, get the results, and then do a second sample within 30 minutes?
Well, they're going to have to. So regardless of whether they know there's a violation or not, they're going to have to take two samples within 30 minutes.
And then presumably if the second sample is a violation, then they'd have to keep doing it every 30 minutes until it goes away, or just two samples and then we're done and try again tomorrow?
Well, I believe that they could, at their own discretion, continue to sample and attempt to demonstrate that the excursion was less than 30 minutes. But we are only going to specify that they do it twice.
Why don't we have some language that says that if there is an excursion, that they continue
sampling
until the excursion?
That's typically what we do. We sample until we know we're in compliance. So if it's over the 30-minute period, we're going to continue sampling because it's our duty to document violations and report them to the board. So we do that.
I would be agreeable to that, yes.
Okay, well, let's have that language there.
Can I jump in? This is for the grab samples?
That is correct.
So for chlorine, you run out, you take a bottle of water, you run it back to the lab, right? You look at that and you say, whoops, and then you're going to be back on that body of water in 30 minutes?
They do have an in-house laboratory, and they've suggested that that's feasible. But like I've said, the permit will specify that they do take two samples. So they'll have to take one, and, you know, they'll take two samples every time they go out, basically. That will be within 30 minutes of each other.
Does that mean 5 minutes apart? That they go out on the same trip, they got two bottles?
No.
Or 2 minutes after the first sample. What do we want to see?
Currently, right now, the way it works for grab sampling is at our peak loading, when we know in the most conservative time, when any type of violation would happen, is going to be when the plant is, you know, at its peak loading. That's when we take our grab sample. If that comes up as a violation, then we travel back down to the outfall, which is about 3/4 miles down where we are, and take another one. That whole process between taking the first sample, coming back to the lab, determining compliance, and then going back down and taking another one, we can do within 30 minutes. And then I think kind of what staff's proposing is us also having another regular sampling period within that one day. So right now we're required to take one sample per day, willing to take two. But any time we have a violation with this, we'd be required to go back within 30 minutes and take another sample to determine compliance.
So with this, there would be up to 48 samples a day. If you have an excursion, you'd be doing it every 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes, 30 minutes. Sorry.
If we had an excursion?
Yeah.
Yeah, if we have an excursion over 30 minutes, we'd be sampling until we are in compliance.
Okay.
Do you have a time date stamp on those?
We're a certified laboratory, and you know all of our chain of custodies are timed, are you know
logged in time.
Logged, yeah. And so we are a EPA certified laboratory.
Okay, Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. So let me understand this. If they have an excursion, and then they go back and retest, and it's still over the amount, then that's a violation. Are they in violation at that point?
That would be correct.
Okay, because it's gone on for more than 30 minutes?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
It's also a violation because it's more than two samples in a month that have been over.
Also, Matt threw out that 97% figure, which I was doing that in my head real quickly. It turns out it's 98.3%. The reason I mention that is that it's getting pretty close to that 99% value that we had before with the continuous sampling.
Okay. Should we move to our public speakers?
Yes.
Public comment? Okay. Thank you. We have three cards, Pamela Hetherington, Gordon Hensley, and I think Andrea Christie? Andrew. Andrew Christie, okay. We'll take them in that order.
Good morning. I'm Pam Hetherington, Executive Director of the Environmental Center. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. We initially submitted comments on this item. We were dismayed that the time frame was so far out there. The state implementation policy requires interim mitigation measures, and I see that we are working towards those. But there still is cause for concern. When they are in violation, what do they do to get out of violation? And when do the public know that they're out of compliance or are violating clean water rules? If we hadn't happened upon this one from a phone call, I probably would not even be aware that the trihalomethanes were a problem in our community. And it's up to you guys to make sure that the Water Act is upheld. And I think that in light of these trihalomethanes and having done some research about their health impacts, that we can't be too diligent in how we handle this. So I'm happy to see that you're going to be requiring more grab sampling, but I also want to see that this 5 to 7 year time frame is pulled in a little bit. The city has agreed that there are simple measures that they can do in the interim. I don't know, because I missed the first part of this item, whether or not those will be institutionalized. But I'm having trouble understanding how you can make a finding that you can't comply if you haven't done what you say you can do to comply. So I would hope that the simple measures that the city say that they can do, and we have met with staff, are taken seriously and that they are acted upon. Thank you.
Question for you.
I have a question. I understand from the staff report that there was a meeting put together between you and the city to talk about schedule. And as a result of that meeting, are you comfortable with the schedule now? Are you more comfortable or still skeptical? Or are there particular areas?
I'll say that I'm a little bit more comfortable but still skeptical.
Are there particular areas that you're skeptical in? Things you think we could do to...
Well, I think the cyanide, during the time that we did meet with staff, you know, they said that was probably... I think it was the cyanide and bromiform levels were like a mistake possibly, but now, you know, that you're having this dialogue, it seems like it's something that's going to be ongoing. And so I think that was kind of a red flag for us, thinking that if it was a mistake or it was a one-time happening, that now you're in a dialogue saying that it's not quite that way. So I do have some skepticism. I'm also very concerned with the time frame, because we do realize that the city is planning on updating the treatment plant in 2010, and though the statement has been made that this is not a driving factor, one can't help but think that because of the time frame.
So. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Gordon Hensley, followed by Andrew Christie.
Good morning, Chairman Young, honorable board members. Director Villeneuve was not here yesterday. Good to see you. I think I'd like... Oh, you need to know who I am for the record. Gordon Hensley, Environment in the Public Interest, the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. First off, I'd like to thank you for the staff time that you have allocated to this in these tight budget times especially. Staff has exerted quite an effort here. We continue to be concerned about the compliance schedule, and I continue to urge you to choose a more aggressive time schedule. I do understand why the city would ask for 5 years and that sort of why they would want to go there, but I do believe that you could hold their feet to the fire a little more, require something on the order of 24 months to 30 months, and deal with any extension beyond that. And Coastkeeper is also concerned about the length of the mixing zone. The implementation policy requires mixing zones to be as small as practicable. This one is approximately 4.3 miles. I think that could be trimmed down. The staff report has identified some feasible alternatives. At a minimum, I think they could, one or more of those could be implemented as an interim measure, and that this could be completed sooner than 5 years and might actually reduce that mixing zone. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hensley. Mr. Christie?
Good morning, board members. I'm Andrew Christie. I'm chapter coordinator for the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. Don't have much to add to what you've just heard. I was at the staff meeting with Pam Hetherington. I would say that the Sierra Club's concerns also have been slightly eased, but our skepticism also remains. At that staff meeting, we did urge staff to implement interim measures in the course of achieving full compliance in the five-year schedule. I'm very pleased to see the alternative chlorine limitation here today. That's certainly one. There were other quote-unquote simple operational changes referenced in the original report that the discharger was willing to engage in, and I think the board could require that as well. Basically this is the right path to go on. We're looking to see the measures suggested that might or might not be implemented that would bring the discharger into compliance with the schedule, and hopefully that will take a lot less than 5 years. Thanks.
Okay. A question for you, Mr. Christie. Mr. Daniels.
You talked about interim measures. Do you have any kind of suggestions you can give us of what you'd like to see there?
I don't have any suggestions beyond the ones that were mentioned in the report. I think there were four or five. There was a chlorine alternative. There was ultraviolet. There were, I think, three others as well. I don't have the report with me. But
the alternatives to look at.
Yeah, they actually did have them listed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in the public wish to address us on this agenda item? Okay. Well, Mr. Briggs.
Did you want to respond?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to the comments from Ms. Hetherington and Mr. Christie with concerns that we aren't requiring the city to implement the simple operational changes. In response to that meeting we had on February 14th, we added the following language to that special provision. Says discharger shall implement any changes or combination of changes that the discharger determines will be effective in reducing trihalomethanes unless the discharger demonstrates to the executive officer's satisfaction that the change or changes are infeasible.
And that's found on page 12 of the order under provisions.
And can you also summarize our final recommendations then, including detailing the changes, which I guess you have up on the screen?
Sure. It's gotten a little messy, hasn't it? In regards, obviously we recommend adoption of the proposed modifications. One change would be this alternative chlorine limitation to allow one individual excursion in any calendar month. We would also include language in the monitoring reporting program that requires total chlorine residual grab sampling twice daily and at any time when there is an excursion to demonstrate compliance with the second requirement. We continue to recommend that the five-year compliance schedule for the chlorodibromo and dichlorobromomethane final effluent limitations of 5 years is reasonable.
Okay. Mr. Daniels.
I have some comments to make, and then I have two suggestions for changes. There's been some mention by the discharger complaining about why are the regulations so stringent on them, and I think we all have to recognize that during the summer, this is called a creek, but it's not a creek. It's really an effluent ditch. So when people go down and play in the water or whatever they're doing, it is effluent they're in. Because essentially the creek upstream, as they mentioned, is often dry. So that's the reason the regulations have to be stringent, is that you've got this thing flowing through the community that's effluent. So it needs to be very high-quality effluent. The whole idea of 23,000 feet of mixing zone is completely anathema to me. I would never, ever go there at all. Maybe 23 feet I would go for it, not 23,000 feet. And the notion of buying easement down the creek so that you can pollute more is a complete anathema to me. I would never, ever consider that. I mean, that's vile, and I don't know why the city would even... I think they should be ashamed for even considering that. As I mentioned before, I think the use of chlorine here, 500 pounds of chlorine a day, I think the city should just get over it and go to ultraviolet and fix the problem once and for all. We do have dischargers up and down the coast who do that, and it's a much safer thing to do. As I mentioned, most of the nasty chemicals out there that we have are chlorine-based, and you put chlorine with organic matter, and it's going to produce problems. And they may be able to get around, they may be able to dodge this bullet this time by going to some other form of chlorine, but eventually it's going to come and bite them. And I think it'll be cheaper for them in the long run just to go to something that's safer. The two suggestions I would like to suggest are changing the monitoring frequencies for those five constituents, the two trihalomethanes, and I forget the other three, they're in here, but changing those to monthly, because those were things that were determined to be potential to occur. So I'd like to see the monitoring frequency be monthly for that. And I was wondering, could we have something in the schedule to encourage them, have staff approve these things and have something from the discharger about, why it's taken so long and looking at the next phase and things they can do to encourage that, just to try and move this along as fast as we can to, as they said, keep the feet to the fire. I mean, I'd like to get it done faster than 5 years, if at all possible. And so we should have things in there to make that encouragement happen. So I'd like to see those two changes.
Any other board comments or questions?
Aren't you also saying that you want to change the mix zone?
Staff was not proposing a mix zone at this time, but I'm saying that if it ever came to me, I would not be supportive of it.
Lori, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I actually had a question on the cyanide limit, the 7.0 average weekly limit. Is there, or 7.0 versus 8.6, is there any basis to conclude that using a 7.0 limit would prevent some degradation that might occur from 8.6, or is the monthly limit stringent enough to prevent degradation? And what I'm saying is there any anti-degradation basis to impose the 7.0 rather than 8.6?
I believe that the 8-point, considering that there is currently no effluent limitation for the cyanide, and that there, I believe that the 8.6 number is adequate. As far as 7, the difference between 7 and 8.6, is that significant degradation? I would argue not.
Well, I guess in the dry season, there would be no degradation because it's all effluent, right?
Right.
Except whatever impact it has on the receiving waters at the end of the creek. But and then in the wet season, there's no basis to conclude that there would be degradation.
There's no evidence that there is cyanide in the upstream water, if that's what you're asking.
Okay, how about Mr. Daniels' suggestion that we do something with the kind of a
schedule?
Scheduling. Mr. Briggs, do you have any thoughts on what we could do with that?
Well, I don't know that I have any great ideas as far as how to do that, but we could say something like that, instead of just saying the discharger shall adhere to the following schedule, that the discharger shall make all efforts to achieve compliance with the effluent limitations as soon as possible, and but in no case beyond the dates in the schedule, and perhaps add something in terms of their requiring them to report on their efforts to accelerate the schedule.
I was also suggesting that with each of the milestones that there be, you know, some reason why it took that long to get it, and you know, and reports on things they might be able to do to accelerate the next one, you know, just to make it put the onus on them to show why it's taking so long, why the last one took so long, and why and propose things that might be done to accelerate the next one.
Okay,
Roger, there is already language in the compliance schedule provision that we can tighten up. It says the discharger shall notify the regional board in writing of its compliance or noncompliance with interim requirements no later than 14 days following each completion date. We can add something that requires them to account for their progress, if that would satisfy you.
It would certainly help.
Okay.
So could you read your language again, the introduction, saying the discharger shall make all reasonable efforts to accelerate the schedule?
I said to achieve compliance with the final effluent limitations as soon as possible, but in no case past the following dates. And then we can follow up with Mr. Daniel's suggestion and add to the paragraph that follows the table and require the city to indicate what they're doing in terms of making any accelerating the schedule for the next milestone date, as well as an explanation of why they were not able to accelerate in the past. I'm not sure how much the retrospective statement, how much good that does, but
certainly the forward looking is more important, I would agree.
Yeah, but if you will indulge us to add that language, I'm guessing the city would be fine with that kind of language.
Yeah, and I think we said earlier that this summer we will be looking at doing some of those activities. So, and you know, it is in our best interest to try to get into compliance quicker than later, and we'll try to make those efforts.
Okay, Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. I want to go back a minute to the alternative chlorine limitation. Do we have other permits in our region that have chlorine limitations? And are they similar to this? Do they have exceptions?
There are other permits with the 99% compliance language for continuous analysis.
Yeah.
Allowing this concept for grab sampling would be unique to this permit.
Okay. I guess I'm just wondering what makes this one special. And I'm not necessarily against making it, you know, unique, but I guess I'm wondering why is this a unique situation that would indicate that we should make this unique exception?
Well, comparing it, other permits to compare it to would be the Men's Colony, the city of Paso Robles, and there are differences in their treatment process that might make them less sensitive to chlorine violations. That's my best answer.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thanks. Okay. Are we ready to have maybe staff go over the recommendation once again before we entertain a motion?
Well, we have the one that's up on the screen.
Then we have other language related to the time schedule.
not much more than what I just sketched out, and actually still hanging is the increase in frequency as far as the sampling. Our recommendation was to increase it to quarterly. As Mr. Thompson said, that represents an increase, certainly within the board's purview to make that monthly for the RPA-related constituents.
And that's...
I'd like to see that.
That's your request.
Well, and we can comply with that, okay, with doing monthly sampling for those two. We would like to revisit that when the permits reopened, I think, in 2007. Okay. And at that time, we'll have more data to allow for the board.
I'm asking for all five of the RPAs.
Right. Yeah, the interim, the interim and the three final.
And three, right.
Right, yeah.
Okay. I think you need a motion.
Okay.
Move to accept with the changes so noted.
Okay. I'll second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. We will move on to agenda item 24, the Big Basin Water Company, NTMP. Mm-hmm.